Stand up for righteousness. Stand up for justice. Stand up for truth.
I truly believe that thoughts are the greatest vehicle to change.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
Victory in spite of all terror. Victory however long and hard the road may be.
To those waiting with bated breath for that favorite media catchphrase, the U-turn, I have only one thing to say. U-turn if you want to. The lady's not for turning.
We do not care whether the cat is black or white, as long as it can catch mice.
Hello and welcome to the No Limitations podcast, a show where we talk to people who have achieved outstanding success in their careers and discovering the influences that have shaped their destinies. I'm your host, Greg Robinson, Managing Partner of Blenheim Partners Executive Search and Board Advisory Firm. Today I'm joined by Georgette Nicholas, Chief Exec of Genworth Mortgage Insurance Australia. Georgette was previously CFO of Genworth Mortgage Insurance Australia and prior was Senior Vice President, Investor Relations, Public Relations and Rating Agencies with Genworth Financial in the United States. She also serves as Chief Financial Officer of the US Mortgage Insurance and International Business. Before joining Genworth, Georgette was a director at Deloitte's. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. My pleasure to be here today with you.
Georgette, we've got a lot to cover today. I think the big thing you and I wanted to really express is our thoughts around, or your thoughts in particular, on the landscape of leadership. How would you define leadership and why are you a CEO?
Thanks, Greg. I mean, I think leadership is changing and how we're defining that today. I believe the old school leadership of being authoritative and being in a hierarchy and being kind of a person who commands from the top is changing. And today, what people are looking for in leaders are people with humility, people with passion who really believe in what they're doing, who are true to their values, and really can connect with the employees, right, and feel that they are there for a greater purpose.
You touched on a pretty sensitive topic, values. Where does that begin and end, Georgette?
I guess for me, it began when I was young. I had a strong influence from a grandmother who immigrated from Ireland to the United States when she was 19, had a strong work ethic, and she instilled that in me. But more importantly, instilled in me a value that if you work hard and try your best, that there are opportunities out there to grow and to better yourself. Also that though you had to give back to your community, and so you had to be grateful for what you had. And so it was important as I grew up that my parents were heavily involved in community activities and making sure that, again, they were influencing the world around them. And so, again, working hard, having opportunities to prosper, but also really making sure that we were living to our core value of giving back and making a difference.
So where does Georgette come from, and which part of the States are you from, Georgette?
Originally from New York.
Okay.
Probably can't tell that from the accent.
You sound pretty nice.
Yeah, the accent doesn't necessarily translate, but probably my Australian accent isn't coming through either. But yeah, grew up in New York, spent 20 years about an hour north of New York City by West Point in the Hudson Valley. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, watched an area that was probably more rural and agricultural grow into really a hot spot for New York City and being kind of a bedroom community. And so the changes that happened there and what the influence on the community has had has certainly impacted me. Then went to college in Connecticut, then ended up kind of living in the city for a while, but then ended up in the South in Raleigh, North Carolina, and Richmond, Virginia before I came here to Australia.
So what made you pursue a career in business?
I guess I was lucky. I knew I wanted to do something in business. I had an uncle who was a lawyer and probably had an influence. My mother was kind of in back office operations. And so I'd spent some time around business. And so knew I wanted to do something related to that. And I had a counselor and a high school teacher who I took an accounting course. And he had a strong conversation with me about majoring and what I wanted to major in. I thought I wanted to major in management or marketing. And he kind of talked to me about the influence that accounting could have and the basic kind of knowledge that that brings to a business. Again, I was young, and so the flexibility that brought as a woman, whether, you know, I wanted to continue on my career or make choices to stay at home, it gave me a lot of flexibility having that core foundation of accounting. So I went and got my Bachelor's of Science in accounting, got a minor in information systems, then got my CPA license.
Okay, so you've pursued a career in accounting, and which has then transpired into broader, obviously, in operations and running and being a CEO. Did you plan your career? Are you one of those chief execs who plan, or are you one of those chief execs that somehow land in the right spot because of the hard work, everything you put into it? What's the story of yourself?
Definitely didn't plan to be a CEO in Australia. If I think back where I was 30 years ago, I started out in public accounting and spent roughly 20-something years in public accounting. I don't like to give the exact date because then you start. But, you know, spent a long time there and ended up being a firm director with a large firm and enjoyed that experience. I think professional services gave me a lot of good training and a strong base to build on. But I found, again, with some of the changes that happened in the U.S., around Sarbanes-Oxley and the rules that came out kind of post or pre-GFC, that really limited the value that I could bring to my clients. And so was really looking to add some value. Also had some personal reasons for making a decision to go to Genworth. I was traveling quite a bit and had a husband that was ill. And so being at Genworth made sense. And, you know, I got there and didn't certainly think about what the future there held. I went in as a technical advisor and ended up being the global controller and then the CFO of the U.S. business during the GFC around the mortgage insurance issues that were happening. And from that, took the investor relations position. And again, had the opportunity because of both of those roles to come to Australia to take the company public.
But why did you take that role to come to Australia? Because you could have stayed in the U.S., obviously, you're building all your networks there.
Yeah, I think the opportunity to experience a different culture and to take a company public, that was something that certainly attracted me to the role. I felt that I knew the business and had good experience, and so it was really about an opportunity to experience something different. And I thought I was coming for a short period of time and was here for a while and ended up staying, so I'm almost here 5 years now.
So has it fulfilled the plan and the ambitions?
I think it certainly is. It's probably exceeding them. You know, I guess when I came for, again, the diversity and to take the company public. I think what I learned was, one, I had a strong finance background, but it's given me the opportunity to really stretch and broaden my skills around strategic thinking, around the ability for me to actually influence diversity and inclusion and to really express what my values are and to influence a company in a way to drive success from those core capabilities and core values.
So you touched on a couple of interesting topics there again, diversity and inclusion. What is your definition of diversity and inclusion?
I think diversity and inclusion is really about diverse experiences, diverse thoughts, and you can express that whether that's gender or culture or other forms of diversity. And so I think it's broader than what we talk about sometimes. And so I think it's really about, again, are we willing to accept people's differences and not put our own judgments on those, but let them express how they feel or what their views are or their experiences influence the decisions that we're making. And for me, that's diversity.
So how do you structure it in the way that you encourage that, Georgette?
I think it's hard sometimes, right? Because I think we are by nature people who tend to put our judgments and our experiences first. And so it really takes really developing people to appreciate, right, that you yourself have an influence on that. I think many times people look at the company and say the company should be doing this. What we've done a little bit at Genworth is really around leadership of the individual and the impact that you have as an individual, how you react to things, how your biases influence what you either hear or what you say. And so, again, appreciating that, knowing that you have those, recognizing them, and then, you know, being open about that in the discussion.
So if I had some, I've got some stats here, Georgette, just to talk to you through, and it wasn't the aim of the discussion today, it wasn't necessarily to spend all the time on diversity. We're here to talk about leadership, but it's part of the thinking. But in the ASX 300, there are 17 chair females, so that's about 6%, which is a pretty small number. CEOs, which you are one, there are 19 out of 300, again, small number. And CFOs, which were previously one, 38 out of 300. Now, that's, again, a very low number. HR is about 205. That's about 70%. So that's a far higher number. We looked at also non-Anglo. In a broader discussion around diversity, I won't necessarily go through all those numbers, but consistently fairly flat, fairly low. Now, we hear it. The first thing we hear with the diversity does come out gender, but your points you're trying to raise, it means a lot more. Mm-hmm. So how we as a nation, you've come from offshore, you've got a diverse background in that sense. You come from finance into an executive CEO role. Again, that's a change in sense. Not everybody can make that move across. What do you look for in talent? What do you look for from leaders? And how, when do you start this beginning, I guess, this thinking?
I do think you have to start it young, and I think it is changing. I think you've seen as generations evolve and come into the workforce that the issues become different. I think part of our goal is to really make diversity not just about gender, but broader. And so part of that is our programs that we have at Genworth, and my philosophy is if it's flexible working, if it's how we think about merit, how we think about people working part-time or sharing roles, that it's not just about gender, it's broader, right? That it's everyone in the organization has those opportunities.
So what does merit mean then, Georgia?
I think how we define success and who we promote and what that looks like. You know, I think, again, back to leadership a little bit, it's that old style of, well, if you work 85 hours a week and
last person to walk out the front out the door.
Right. And are available weekends, holidays, all of that, that's success and you should get promoted. And I think there's a view that those people are impactful and add value to the company. And in most cases, they do. But I think the question is that all that can be defined as somebody who's successful and someone that's worthy of being promoted? And I think that's, as part of leaders, we have to redefine what we think that looks like. So, you know, someone who's working 3 days a week but is extremely productive and impacts the organization significantly, right, can be just as successful as someone who works 5 days. So it's kind of, again, changing the measure about time to actual impact of an organization.
What's your thoughts on quotas? That comes up very often as well.
I believe we need to measure things. I think if you measure them, then you're at least accountable for them. And so I think setting targets is important to measure against. But I think it's more importantly also to understand that you're not setting them just to meet them. I think it's very easy to set a target that you know you're going to meet. I think it's more challenging, right, to set something that you know is not achievable all the time and to understand why. And I think, you know, when you talk about the number of women that are in the ASX 300, some of it is about how do we keep people in the pipeline? And so, again, whether they're in technical roles or functions like finance or actuarial or risk, you know, how do we keep, or technology, you know, how do we keep them in the pipeline? Because the reality is women will leave the workforce, right, to have families. And there's options, though, right, for us to stay in contact with people to help them develop as they go through those life changes, or bring them back into the organization that they left in a way that supports them. I think many times we bring them back, but do we provide programs and support for them to make that transition back in? Because, again, the world does move on. Things change, right? Yeah. And they have additional responsibilities. And so how do we help them balance that?
So is there enough thought given to that, do you think?
Not all the time. I think that's changing. I think, again, you know, the discussion has to keep happening. I think, again, it does take time. And I know some people will be frustrated, right, that we're still talking about it. But I do think change takes time. And we have to keep it at the forefront of the discussion, though, and keep figuring out why it's not working. And I think that's, again, how do we keep that pipeline growing so that more women end up in senior roles?
So from your position, does the stats concern you? Because those stats haven't really moved a lot in the last number of years. For all the talk at the most senior level, I guess we're covering today, the stats haven't really improved, have they?
No, they haven't. And I think it's really about how do we keep this pipeline growing, right? Knowing that there's reality in life of when, right, people in many phases of their life will step in and out. Some people do it for children.
Yeah.
You know, we focused on females, but men do it too, right? They become caregivers, or they decide they want to stay home. And so how do we help, right, people continue to develop in a pipeline that allows people to grow into senior leaders? And I think if we do that, then the conversation about diversity starts to evolve, because it's not just, again, about gender. It's about a broader, holistic development of experiences and acknowledging those experiences and appreciating for what they bring back to the table.
So when you get out of bed in the morning, what gets you into the office first thing? Like, what drives you, Judith?
Besides coffee. I think it's a passion to really believe I've been very blessed, right, to have the opportunities that have happened to me. And so my goal is to leave the world better than when I arrived. And you know, some of that's the values that, again, I was brought up with. But, yeah, I really want to make a difference, right? And so whether that's helping to develop people to succeed, whether that's to influence the business, right, in a certain direction, or to, again, be an advocate for gender equality and pay equality or diversity and inclusion. I think it's how do I leverage, right, something that I've been blessed with having the opportunity to receive and leave the world better.
Was it a big jump from moving from the technical role as CFO, mm-hmm. which is a leadership role, into the number one role? It's a pretty lonely role at the top, as they say.
Yeah, it was. I guess I had heard that saying quite a bit and probably underappreciated what that really meant. And again, how people, again, use their judgment and assumptions to change, right, their interactions with you. So, again, it took me a period of time to realize also that people weren't interested in just how good I was with the numbers anymore.
Yep.
They wanted to know my opinion. They wanted to know what my vision and philosophy was. And so as someone reminded me, you know, when you're in the CFO role, you can talk a lot about that. But when it's ultimately then your decision to go do something, it changes, right? How your yeah. perspective looks and how you think about what you are or aren't willing to share. And I guess that's where you have a choice of either really opening up and being somewhat vulnerable about what you really want to achieve and don't always get it right. Yep. But again, being able to share that, I think, with the team has built us to a stronger relationship and an understanding of what I'm trying to accomplish and what my motives are.
On your decision-making, a number of chief execs were talked through early in their careers, a lot of it was based on extensive analysis. Mm. And they sort of stood back and thought, actually, some of my best decisions have actually been on instinct. Mm. Are you starting to go across that way now?
I think it's finding that balance, right? We've all heard about analysis paralysis.
Yeah.
And so, again, you can have a lot of data and information. And I think as you move up the chain, right, it's finding that balance of how much information you need versus your instinct. I think that develops with experience. Although I think I have a really gut instinct about people, decisions, issues. And I think that's one of my strengths is that ability to kind of have that instinct, kind of put things together very quickly and then understand the data and information that I'm looking at pretty quick, right, to be able to make a decision.
Nothing's ever easy, Trudette. Mm-hmm. And most chief execs have had some sort of tough times during their career. I guess it's adversity which brings the best out of people. I think you and I have had some chats in the past. It hasn't been the easiest run. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk through some of the what sort of the character building things you've been through?
I had a lot of challenge for a good part of my career. My late husband was diagnosed with cancer after we were married 2 years. I was in my late 20s.
Wow.
And so we rode kind of a 15-year, I would say, roller coaster dealing with his health issues and also with life. You know, I think we were realistic that he had a limited time here. And so, you know, again, probably made a lot of decisions that benefited his career so that he could certainly enjoy that and experience it. And so I moved around quite a bit in the beginning.
Did you? Yeah.
To support that. But also, you know, I think it drew on, right, your energy and your resources. And, you know, it was a challenging time during the GFC was when he was probably really quite ill. And so trying to balance a business that was certainly navigating a very tough environment, but also dealing with a husband who was probably in the last couple of years of his life was also challenging. So finding that balance of where you spend your time and what's important, I think that's what it showed me, you know, to really appreciate what was important and, you know, that we all deal with adversity in our lives. And I think, again, when things like that happen, you have many choices. You can let it really get you down and I guess, you know, allow you to make decisions, right, to just kind of hunker down and not take risks and not and try things. But I guess for me, it really showed me, you know, the importance of, again, bringing value, influencing people's lives and having the ability, right, to continue to move forward. I think that resilience, right, when things are difficult and challenging, I guess I've been through the worst. And so watching someone that you love go through a challenging illness and ultimately pass away from it, right, is kind of the most challenging experience you can have. And so I guess, one, it helps me keep perspective, not always. Sometimes I have to remind myself, but I think it also helps me, you know, to show that I'm resilient. You can bounce back and it wasn't easy, right?
Yeah,
there were many days I didn't want to get out of bed and the job did help that, right? Because you felt at least a desire to help people. And so it was a help, but also, yeah, at sometimes a burden.
You're talking a fair bit about higher purpose. Mm. What does that mean to you, Trudette?
And I know that can sound self-serving. I'm sure some people are, you know, saying, oh, that's very, you know.
And we're not smoking anything in this
room. Right. Yeah. So, you know, I think people will say, oh, she's crazy. It doesn't mean that I don't want to be financially stable and secure, right? I think that's important to.
So has that been a big driver?
It is. You know, I grew up again with a middle-class family and so saw the struggles, right, of my parents and wanted to always make sure that I didn't have that or my children didn't. And so, you know, part of that was working hard and making sure that I was financially stable and being smart about that. But the other piece is that, you know, I hope when I leave, people feel like their life was influenced by me. And so, you know, to me, that's, have I developed people and left individuals behind, right, that value what I brought to the table and have I influenced their values, their leadership style, and their success?
Let me ask you a really basic question. Mm-hmm. How difficult is it for a female to get ahead?
It can be a challenge sometimes. And I say that I think I started early in my career and underappreciated, right, some of the things that went on. And today, right, those things wouldn't happen. And so whether that's being asked to pick out a pair of shoes, right, for my manager in a public accounting firm.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. Or, you know, other things that are far worse, right, that I've watched happen and had to deal with, right? And again, make a choice about whether you speak up. I think that's in the beginning of my career, I probably was a pain in the ass for some people, right? Because I wasn't willing to sit back and not say anything. So you
voice your opinion, do you?
Yeah. So, you know, when people were out on the golf course on a Friday afternoon and I was taking the client calls, you know, I learned to golf and yet I would still be left, you know, behind, right, or not invited.
Right.
And so, again, expressing my view that, you know, appreciate that I might not be as good and couldn't play necessarily off the men's tees, right, but certainly could play along and be part of the discussion. And so, again, fighting for that, I'm sure there's a view, you know, that that's a pain. And you know, why are you talking about that? But, you know, it's that fundamental issue, right, of being part of the discussion, being at the table and making sure that you're being part of the process. And so it does take, I think, sometimes you stepping out of your comfort zone a little bit and pushing a little bit harder. I think also ignoring the judgment, right? So, again, depending on your personality and your leadership style and the way you interact, I think many times, sometimes my passion gets mistaken for emotion.
Does it?
Okay. And so, you know, again, appreciating that, appreciating those views, but trying to, I think, navigate what's real feedback and things that you need to change versus, again, that assumption and perception and judgment of again, you and I will react different to yep. situations, and that's not bad. But again, appreciating, you know, that that's not also a reason for not promoting someone or not helping them move forward.
So intimidation is not, it's not something which really upsets you anymore?
No, I don't think, no, I'm pretty vocal about my views and what I think. And I guess it took me a while to get comfortable in that. I think certainly as you move through your career, right, and have some success, that builds. And so you get a little bit more confidence, right, that you can step out on that limb and be supported. I also have been very lucky in my career. I've had a number of people, both males and females, who have been extremely supportive of helping me develop, right, giving me opportunities. And I think that's also...
You've also worked pretty hard, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. I hope I have. Yeah, you know, I think, again, I put a lot into my own self and how I think about my leadership. I'm pretty reflective and I'm probably my harshest critic. And so I think every time, you know, people make comments or say things or talk about the way something's happened, right, I take that to heart and really reflect on, you know, how did I influence that? What did I contribute and how do I change? And I think that's all you can do is to keep trying. So I guess, yeah, a realization, right? We're not perfect. Leaders are not perfect. We're people. CEOs are not perfect. They're people and we'll make mistakes. You know, I think it's then what do you do about that? You know, do you have the courage to apologize? Do you have the courage to change your decision or lean into a new issue? And I think sometimes, you know, people will criticize, right, when you change a decision.
Yeah.
Or you change
as a backflip or something like that.
Yeah. Yep. Or you change your strategy, right, and direction without an appreciation, right, that you've done that because the market's moved, right? Or again, you got more information or somebody gave you a different perspective and you realize that's a different route to go. And that's hard to, right, as the CEO to come in and say, you know what, I made that wrong decision, right? Or we, you know, we need to go in a different direction. But I think if you're a good leader, right, you'll do that.
On the diversity and inclusion discussion, are we on par with the United States? Are we behind? Mm-hmm. And the second part of my question is, when you read the papers on pretty much in some form in one paper every day of the week, is it going about it the right way? Or are we all getting to a point, I think even you and I said, you know, is it becoming ho-hum because it's been put out so often, or are they losing their voice based on the stats? So I'd be interested in your thoughts there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess when you look at what's happening in the U.S. with the Me Too movement, yep. right, certainly you'd have to believe that it's not as advanced as we all would have hoped. and certainly I think their numbers prove out, right, that they still are not getting huge women opportunities for women in senior roles. And so I think the question is why, and I think it comes back to, right, we've got a lot of view of what leadership should be and what we think success should be or merit for promotion. And so are we really challenging ourselves, right, that the world is different and what people want as leadership is different, right? And I think we see it in our political leaders. You know, do we want people who don't have humility, who don't have, right, the ability to acknowledge that maybe they don't know all the answers, but that they're willing to work, right, with a team to get different perspectives and facilitate a resolution. And I think that's where, you know, that evolution, right, is moving. And so I think, again, that'll help move both, you know, inclusion and diversity forward from a gender perspective, but also I think in diversity of thinking and thought.
What's next for you, Judget? What's the next step in your career? Because the business is doing reasonably well. Not like you said, it's your first gig as a CEO. Mm-hmm. What's the aspirations?
I don't know. I'm open to opportunities. You know, I think it's I'm certainly continue to learn and certainly experience the role with Genworth. Certainly what's going on with the business right now is housing is challenging, the market's challenging, and we're certainly navigating through that. We've been implementing a strategy over the last 3 years that I think is providing a lot of flexibility for the business go forward. And certainly we've been influencing the culture and on a journey of really, again, creating this diverse and inclusive environment where people can share their views, opinions, and experience that. So, you know, I guess right now I don't know what that next opportunity is, but, you know, I guess as we started, I didn't plan to be here as a CEO in Australia. And so I guess, you know, part of why I'm here is because I'm always listening for what opportunity is out there and not necessarily planning it.
As an ASX CEO, do you find it very personal, some of the stuff you read in the mm-hmm. press? Australia, small country, a lot of coverage. Analysts can be pretty forthright compared to the US or the UK, where it's more around your performance as opposed to the personal side mm-hmm. And attacking the person. How have you found it?
Been relatively lucky in the press, you know, have not necessarily been personal, although the picture on the back of the AFR was not something I wanted to see. It's a little bit of a joke internally about that was one of the goals of public relations is not to have me there. But yeah, no, I think it's a small, you know, community, right? And so there is a lot of headline grabbing. And so I'm always thoughtful, right, that I have to make sure that anything that I do, right, is representing the company well and myself well. And I think it goes back to your values. But I try not to read it. So even when earnings,
that's all right.
Yeah, even when earnings come out, you know, I have a team that obviously looks at that stuff and they'll let me know if there's something significant. But I try not to read about myself. I try not to listen to myself too often. And I try not to also take some of the criticism, right, personally. I think that's back to, again, an environment. People can be very judgmental and make very big assumptions, right, around why you do or don't do things or may not have a full perspective, right, of the implications of things that you may decide or not decide to do. And so I try not to take that personally, but figure out why they feel that way and either try to expand communications, reach out to people or try to, again, I guess I'm a little bit of a problem solver, but try not to take it personally. But it can be lonely at the top. And so I think it's finding an outlet to have a conversation with someone. I have a coach. And again,
oh, do you?
Yeah. And again, it's to really have someone to bounce things off of and ideas. I have a strong relationship with my chairman, and I think that's important. And so, again, having that ability to at least talk things through without being, I guess, viewed as you're being performance reviewed or something is important. So I think it's having that outlet and then also taking time for myself. And so trying to, again, make sure that, you know, personally you're taking time for yourself, which I'm probably not always good at.
What do you see as a difference between business culture, work culture in the US and Australia?
Probably the biggest thing I've noticed is the size of the markets. And I really underappreciated coming to Australia, right? The size of the market and what that might mean as people look at staying and living and working here. And I think some of that comes down the level of risk that we may be willing to take. It also, you know, is there a drive to do something more? And again, people are very comfortable and, you know, rightly so, it's a beautiful place. And so people get in roles and they stay in roles. And is there that push to do more and expand capabilities and grow? I see, you know, I think you're that entrepreneurial spirit. Sometimes it's not always present in a business. And so how do you make employees feel like it's theirs so that they have more influence and more input? And I think in the U.S., many companies feel that way.
So how do they do it more so in the U.S.? Is it more ownership? Is it equity? What do you see more of?
Yeah, it's probably a combination of all those things, right? Yeah. So I think, again, in various companies, there's some type of employee share arrangement. And yeah. I think that becomes size. Again, in the U.S.,
scale.
The market is much larger. And so the number of shares on issue, right, are much greater in the U.S. Yep. than they are for companies here. Yeah. I think, again, people will move around, right, and yep. leverage that spirit to try new things. And they're not afraid to move companies where, again, I think here, right, you've got a limited number of entities that you can go work for is the yep. reality. So I think that limits what people are willing to try or press.
So that's capping our appetite for risk then?
I think to a degree it is.
So how do you encourage your guys to stick their head above the parapet?
Yeah, I think it's to try to, again, use some of our information that we know globally, right? And so part of that, it's leveraging that experience from other markets as to what might have happened there and to work through that as a scenario here. I think it is to educate and provide information about why it's important to have an inclusive and yep. an environment that people are willing to speak up and express their opinions and views. So, you know, again, to encourage that in a way that gets the debate and the conversation going and not limit it. So I think it's, you know, I think that opens up then people's view about what risk means and what risk taking means.
Because we talked earlier about diversity and we said the heading inclusion. Yeah. And inclusion could be something, you know, could be the chief exec walk around the floor saying hello, hello, hello. And people responding back saying hello, hello back. That's not really inclusion, is it, in that sense? But it seems to be a bit of a cop-out in some regards. How do you tackle this heading, inclusion?
Yeah, it's about the debate. You know, I think that's one of – and I think that's hard sometimes. You know, your employees don't want to debate the CEO. But that's what I want, right? I want the challenge. I want the intellectual sharing of information and knowledge because, again – I think what we find too, you know, in a technical business where there's a lot of modeling going on and data and numbers, bringing someone that has a totally different perspective, right, from that analytical mind can sometimes help us break open an issue that we're trying to solve. So, you know, I think it's appreciating what those differences are and really, again, that inclusion is about the ability to share thoughts and ideas.
So what was the culture you set to achieve?
Yeah.
What did you inherit, did you?
So I probably inherited, right, more of an old style type of environment where, again, there was a hierarchy and people responded to that.
Command and control type?
Command and control, okay. Which is not unusual. And certainly, you know, we were off of a foundation of GE. And so, again, that's what they're known for. Yep. And so that was in the organization. Really what I've tried to instill really is again, an environment and a culture where people are open and transparent about what they do and why they do it, that they feel comfortable sharing their opinion and can verbally challenge and talk and discuss issues. And I think what's important, that's not personal, it's business. And I think yep. that's very important. You know, this is not people calling each other outright around their skills, right? That's a separate yep. behind the scenes. This is about a debate around the issue, the business issue. And then being accountable for issues and whether they're yours or not. So I think that's one of the things we've tried to instill or I've tried to instill at Genworth and the team is that it doesn't matter whether it's in your area or your function, right? If it's happening in the business as a senior leader or as a leader in the organization, it's all of our responsibility to take accountability for those issues.
Is there anything you did that was surprised the team when you first started? Is there any, did you break any particular structures or did you... you know, change the morning meetings to an afternoon meetings, or is there anything which you want to share with us which really set the tone?
Yeah, so, you know, I think one of the things is I did make some changes in the senior leadership team and for various reasons. And so, you know, restructuring how we reported. I think also, you know, we did reevaluate why we were doing things, in particular meetings. And so, again, trying to get away from meeting after meeting after meeting. I think we still have challenges there. You know, why are we in meetings? But really making sure that we understood the difference between conversation and debate and governance. And I think, you know, in an environment where governance is extremely important and we need to ensure that that happens, that doesn't mean you have to give up debate, dialogue, right, and exchange of information and ideas. And I think that was one of the things, was breaking down some of that and really making sure that we were spending our time wisely. I think the other was really focused on what our strategy was. And so being very clear about what that was, what our priorities were, and making hard decisions. You know, some people had projects that they had been working on and we stopped them.
Yeah.
Right. Or said, no, we're not going to go ahead and do them. And that's hard when, you know, people are invested in it. So trying to make sure that they appreciated why we were doing that.
I think some people also don't necessarily understand the challenge around this move from CFO to CEO. Mm-hmm. Because everybody knows you as the CFO, and suddenly you're number one person, you're the boss. How did you change a lot in how you dealt with people?
I'd like to say no, but I probably did. And I think that's partially because how they started to interact was different. And so I think one of the things, you know, I didn't appreciate that dynamic would always would change. And so started out, you know, going to ask, right, someone that I always chatted with questions, and certainly, right, there might have been someone in the leadership chain that I had kind of bypassed, and that created, right, a different dynamic as the CFO versus the CEO. And so, you know, trying to appreciate some of that, you know, again, people will have a very different view of what the CEO is and how the CEO should act and who they should talk to. And so, again, making sure that that was getting managed, but also that, again, this view of creating an inclusive environment meant that I could go talk to anybody. And that wasn't a negative, right, on the person who may be the senior leader of that function. It was just easier, right, to go get some information. And so, for me, it was then sharing, right, with that person that I had talked to so-and-so and gotten this and what do you think kind of thing. So it's hard. It's hard, yeah. I guess also, you know, people that I knew and maybe, you know, had gone to dinner and drinks with, right, and in a more relaxed kind of personal atmosphere, right, that dynamic changes because all of a sudden, again, you're not the CFO, right, kind of a peer or even, you know, someone they can come and talk to. You're the CEO of the company. And so, you know, some of that was my own probably bias too, of where I felt safe with who and people. And so, yeah, you found your relationships changed a little bit.
CEO sets the culture, or culture starts from the top. You're an interesting sector, financial services. Mm-hmm. If we stand back, look at the broader financial services sector at the moment, there is commissions going on and reviews going on. What do you see? Disappointment? Is it overexposed? Is it blown out? Or is it actually, you know, some real questions around values to be tackled?
Yeah, I think given everything that you've seen, right, we have to question our values and whether we're living them. And are we holding that up to ensure that the decisions that we make, right, really reflect that? And do we really understand the impact of the decisions that we're making? I think that's what, you know, some of it's coming out is, you know, do we understand all the impacts that we're having from the consumer, right, to the board and shareholders? I think the other is, are we creating environments, right, where people who know that there are issues feel that they can fix them, right, and that they're empowered, right, to do something about it? And if they don't get the response that they want, right, they have to take accountability to elevate that and keep at it and keep trying. And how do we make sure that they don't feel that there's ramifications for that, right? And so, again, I think this conversation around remuneration and how that impacts behaviors and what, again, we reward for success and merit, you know, do we need to redefine that?
How would you redefine it?
I think we have to be thoughtful that there are many stakeholders, right, in a world that we live in, and a business, when you're running a business, there's many stakeholders, but we can't make decisions that, you know, I guess lean towards one versus the other all the time. And there's got to be a balance. And I think that's where, you know, you see it in the States too, you know, this concept of wealth creation and the dispersion, right, that's happening from the top to the bottom. You know, are we all living our values? And is that really, is the goal of business to just make the most money we can? Or is it to somehow provide support to the economy, to make sure that we're addressing issues around climate change, that we're thinking about training people as technology and artificial intelligence happens? You know, what is the role of business and in particular financial services in helping people make that transition? And I think that's where, you know, coming back to our core values and objectives, you know, what role do we play in that?
But where does that discussion take place?
So I think some of it's at the board level. I think boards have to really decide what they want their companies to be and ensure that that tone is getting set and communicated right through the CEO and down into the organization. I think publicly, you know, things like this that we, you know, we talk about the issue and have a conversation with all constituents. You know, I think many times we tend to have constituents isolated. And so are we all getting in a room and talking about what the potential issues are, solutions and outcomes around that? It's not an easy issue, right? We all want to have a nice retirement. We all want to have dividends from companies, right? And so we want those companies to be profitable. People are employed by these companies and make money, right, to keep those employees. And certainly, right, we all take pay checks home for that. So, you know, it's not an easy answer to say, well, we're just going to give everything to the consumer, because in the end, that consumer may be a shareholder, right, and expecting a dividend. So, you know, I think, again, it's coming back to, are we living our values? Do we feel like we're making decisions with integrity? And continuing, you know, to try to make sure that we know that there's a number of stakeholders and you find a balance.
Can I ask you, what's your thoughts on the bonus? Now, there's two types of bonuses, the STI and the LTI. It seems to be that STI is almost guaranteed, not guaranteed, but it's part of my base these days, or it's taken as such. And you talked about, say, the banking sector. If I do it pretty harsh on the back of a envelope, couple of numbers, dividends haven't grown for the four pillar banks tremendously in the last 3 to 4 years. So if I'm a mum and dad shareholder and I've got some life savings in these organizations and my super's in that as well, it's very simple numbers, very simplified. And I'm seeing bonuses being passed out as if it's guaranteed in some regards. I'm saying, well, hold on, why are they getting these STIs when actually their growth hasn't been in dividends, which is paying me back as a shareholder? Is it much to, what's your thought? And look, it drives behaviors, et cetera, as we covered earlier. But what are your thoughts on the whole STI, LTI discussion? Very complex. You read the annual reports. Takes forever to get through it, to work it. And I don't think anybody really does understand them. And then there's how do you measure it, et cetera, as well. But do you have any thoughts around that?
Yeah, I think it's a hard balance, right? Your points are very valid. And I think the flip side is, how do you then motivate, right, a senior team to achieve, right, the goals that we're talking about? You know, in a business like ours where it's long term and takes a while for things to develop, right? Many times you're paying for the sins of the past or that there's an economic cycle that happens, right? Like now with mining. And so that certainly pressures, right, the short term incentive plan that we have in place. But I think to your point, it does have to be balanced to provide that motivation, but also the return. And I think some of that is we can't lose sight of what the metrics are, right, to measure that. And, you know, we can't change those up all the time. I think that's one of the challenges, is you've seen those evolve and move and modify, right, based on whether people think they can or can't hit them. I think it's also being very transparent about why you're setting them and what the targets are and what the achievements are, right, that are supporting that. And to your point, you know, is it too complex in the annual reports for people to really understand, right, what the objectives were and whether those were
well. Half the people that we interview don't even look at their LTI anymore, because it's a bit of a, you know, it's all beyond their control, as we know.
That's right.
And therefore, it's bordering on, in some cases, almost a disincentive.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, the question is, how does that impact talent go forward? Yep. You know, and I guess, you know, going back, you know, I want to leave the world in a better place. Correct. I want to, you know, ensure that I'm living my values, but I also want to be financially stable and rewarded for my work. And so how do you, again, make sure that you're providing a remuneration structure that, right, is going to bring strong talent to organizations. And I think that's the challenge. You know, how do you reward people for continuing to work hard, think about diversity and inclusion, bring their good self to work every day if they don't feel like they're being rewarded? And that's, you know, I think right now we're kind of in an extreme where these programs are again, old school. And so, again, are we measuring the right things? I think that's a fair evaluation, you know, and again, how are the proxy advisors and shareholders influencing that? You know, what do they value from companies? And again, I think it goes back to, you know, do they have strong commitments? A lot about corporate sustainability is certainly developing, and you see more and more shareholders asking about that and having us all set goals and achievements around that. But how far do they take that, and is that the new measure?
If you had your magic wand, what would you change?
I think some of it's around the allocation of again, this financial quantitative piece, which is easy to calculate and easy to see, but also, right, that's what's caused some of the challenges around the remuneration and whether, again, it was driving certain behaviors. And so, again, a lot of times that's weighted very heavily versus some of the other strategic type of options, which can be more qualitative in measure. But I think, again, probably are more influential in how you live the values of your corporation or yourself, how you influence inclusion and debate topics, and so more about behaviors than necessarily the quantitative part of it.
How do you find dealing as a CEO? You're going to front those analysts, all very short term. And you're talking today about driving behaviors, changing behaviors, thinking long term, get repeat business, et cetera, build that culture. And then you've got an analyst coming to see you on the 6-monthly and almost quarterly in some cases report saying, where's the numbers?
I think it's hard to not react to that short term view. And so I think it's important that the board, right, and the management team are aligned about what the true strategy of the company is and what the true objective is.
You got to make sure they're backing you.
That's right. And I think that's, you know, to be very clear, right, and transparent about what are those goals and objectives. And so when you are, right, deciding that you're going to go long term and there's going to be some bumps, right, that people appreciate that and appreciate the volatility that might bring, and that we're thoughtful about the outcomes around that. But yeah, I mean, I think it's back to, right, if you make some short term decisions, right, a lot of times these companies won't be sustainable. And yes. I think that's where, you know, where sustainability is headed, right? We're talking a lot about energy and climate, yep. and yep. those things. But I do think it's also about profitability, right, of companies and the long-term longevity of them in various economic cycles, right? And some of that is that you're then making decisions for the long term, not the short. But yeah, I think you have to be very aligned with your board and have support of that and be very clear.
How much time do you spend on the actual business, the sense of setting my thinking for the future as opposed to dealing with the day-to-day with analysts and board? How much is the time taken?
Yes.
And is that proportional to what you think should be right?
Yeah, so I probably spend, I would say, about 40% of my time, right, between the analyst community, the board, and kind of thinking strategically, which I think is probably higher than most people would probably say, right? A lot of people get pulled into day-to-day operations, and I do at various times. You know, yep. I think we've been in the process of year-end, those type of things, yes. right? You get pulled in various challenges on the operations side. But I think part of it is me not going to my comfort zone, which is that. And so I think that some challenges, right, as a CEO is not when things are stressful and not easy that I don't gravitate to the finance side or to even the investor side because that's my background. But yeah, I probably spend, you know, quite a bit of time with the chair and talking through issues with him and some of the challenges we're facing and some thoughts around what we might think about doing. But then also a lot external, you know, kind of views of what's happening in the market. Where is it headed? You know, I think an example, we made a small investment in TikTok.
Yep.
And really that was about us, you know, becoming an LMI provider, but more importantly, learning about where the mortgage digitization of the market might go and how that channel may change and develop over time. So, you know, I think, again, it's looking at those type of opportunities and figuring out, you know, are there small ways to look at those and develop and grow.
Gigi, what's your thoughts on the economy? Because one of the things we're all worried about is a credit crunch. But if you talk to any person trying to get a mortgage at the moment, it's extremely difficult. And that's the first thing being tightened up. Can't get capital. If I can't get capital, surely goodness, there could be a credit crunch. We could be leading ourselves into that slowdown that none of us really want. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's an interesting, certainly we're at the forefront of that discussion, you know, in particular around housing and how home price declines is going to impact the economy. You know, I think when you step back, you know, unemployment is low.
It is.
And so jobs are still being created. Yep. Yep. And so I think, you know,
inflation's low.
Yeah. Interest rates remain right low. And so there's still a strong base, right, to allow the economy to continue to move forward. It's probably not growing as it was, right? But it's got a nice steady pace. I think the question for everyone is, and so I don't expect unemployment to drive, right, huge delinquency development. I do think what you're seeing from a credit perspective, right, is some of this recalibration around interest-only loans to principal and interest. And you know, some of that is around a tax regime that's certainly being debated and depending on what happens from an election standpoint could certainly have an influence.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think, again, when you look at some of that, it's around this tightening of serviceability and borrow expenses and commitments that people have from a debt perspective, right, and trying to rein some of that in. You know, I guess from our standpoint, we don't think that there's a huge bubble coming because of the unemployment being so low.
Yep.
But there's certainly pressure areas, right, as we think about Western Australian mining and that economy is still developing and trying to recover from that. And certainly, again, this whole response to the Royal Commission and what happens around borrow expenditures, what happens around brokers and their influence in the market.
Do you think we've rebounded too harsh?
I think we could. I think that's one of the challenges, right, that you can create your own crisis if you tighten it up too hard.
Yeah.
Not dissimilar to the GFC, right, when, again, credit tightened up quite a bit and caused, right, another flood of delinquencies. So I think there's a fine line, right, and I think one question I have is, again, does some of it move from the very concentrated market with the four majors, right, into more of your mutuals or your regionals? And I think we are seeing that. You're also seeing some of your non-regulated lenders come into the market and certainly pick up what they would consider prime business, you know, strong underwriting, strong quality credit. And I think also there's changes in the market around comprehensive credit reporting, the advent of the credit score. That'll all influence, again, how people think about credit.
Do you think the whole question around how much capital the banks have got to hold, is that, do you think it's excessive or what?
I'd like them to use more LMI to reduce that. you know, I think, you know, it's a noble endeavor, right, to be unquestionably strong and ensure that you can withstand any type of stress event and crisis. I think the balance is, right, what's the impact on people willing to invest then in your companies, given the returns or the level, right, of profit, right, that may be associated with that. And I think that's the longer term challenge, right? Do you get like offshore investors, right, to come here and put money here in Australia to help it grow?
I was going to ask you about that. So being someone from that diverse background who's come from the States, do you think we really understand or we're close enough or put full attention to what's happening offshore? We are a little economy. We are a receiver, not necessarily a giver out there in that sense. We've got Brexit coming up as well. What are your thoughts on sort of the macro environment?
I'm not sure we always take advantage of the opportunities it presents, right? I think
it's a great point.
Yeah, I think sometimes we see things developing, but we probably have an ability to either influence, right, or partner or drive, and we sit back and kind of wait. I think also, are we open enough to think about, right, what's coming from offshore you know, some of that's around technology and around just the use of data and information. And so, you know, again, are we looking for those opportunities? Are we so risk adverse, right, to trying some of those different things? In particular, because some of that has got negative connotations with investors, right? Going offshore, right? And some of the success or lack of success, right, is certainly influencing that. So I think it's, again, are we open to seeing what's there and taking advantage of the opportunity it may present, but also learning from it.
Where do you see the opportunity? Do you see the opportunity in Asia? Do you see the opportunity in Europe or in the US?
So I do think there's an opportunity in Asia. You know, I think I think there the question becomes scale, right? And so again, it's about how do you go in there and grab the right partner, right, to establish a level of scale. I do think the U.S. economy, certainly with the way it's growing right now, and it's an opportunity. And I think probably an opportunity, right? And you see some of the global players coming in to look at some of the financial services companies. Some of the purchases have been from Asia or the U.S.
Would you drop our tax rates here, Georgette?
Certainly, right? I think, again, from a business perspective, if, you know, they're incentivized to have a lower rate and reinvest that into jobs and the economy, then certainly that's an incentive. And you see that periodically, right, as a way to increase production or increase manufacturing or increase employment. And so I think the question is, where do you give that incentive, and how do you drive to ensure that, again, it doesn't come out and just go to dividends, right, but it goes back to either helping people get trained in technology and artificial intelligence and you know, all of those things and kind of move into the new economy.
And we started off this conversation around leadership, and there's political leadership as well. Obviously, you've got to be mindful what you do say, but standing back, looking at from someone who's been offshore and come to this country for 5 years in a key role, what are your thoughts of the debate in itself? Yeah.
Oh, remember, I'm coming from the U.S., so, well, listen, I think it's hard, right? I think it's never easy to have those roles, and I think the question is, right, what's the best outcome from the country? And so, you know, are we making decisions because of political party, or are we making it because it's the best decision for the country? And so I think, you know, again, for me, back to leadership, you know, I think there is an element of collaboration that has to happen. And so, again, it's very easy, I think, to take polarizing sides and be all or nothing. I think it's harder, right, to find that middle ground to make change, right? And even if it's slow change, but to at least start to make change and to have an influence and an impact on the world around you. You know, I guess, again, it's very easy to sit back and say, nope, that's my position. And you know, I'm not going to engage on the other side. That's the easy way to do it. The hard way is to actually get in the room and actually appreciate, right, their perspective. You don't have to agree, but to appreciate, right, maybe why the view is there, what their basis is, and then to try to come to some resolution, right, to, again, drive growth for people.
Do you think Australian business puts forward their view enough compared to maybe America? I'm interested in your thoughts there.
I think it's harder with the environment. Again, the small market, the media, the attention to headlines. I think one of the things I see is many times you see the headlines, but the story is not necessarily reflective. And so, again, I think under that kind of environment, it's hard sometimes to manage what your communication or your message is and ensuring that it really gets represented as you thought it would.
What would you say to the young executives starting their careers off now? How do you get to the top, Georgette?
I think part of it is patience and having some patience for things to develop. You know, I guess when I looked at my career in my 20s, I thought, you know, I had to have it all then and be constantly, you know, moving and scaling and getting different, you know, experiences. And so I moved around a little bit. I guess I learned, you know, things take time to develop. Your experience takes time. And it was more about, you know, was I enjoying the opportunity along the way? So, you know, was I really learning new things and enjoying that experience? And as I got, you know, more focused on that, you know, my career really took off, you know, kind of my late 40s. And I think that's where, you know, it doesn't always have a timetable, right? It's about how does all that experience come together and what opportunity opens up because of it.
You put yourself into the spot where you could get opportunity, didn't you, by doing good work?
Yeah, I work hard, right? I used, and I think it was, again, in the beginning, I had a strong technical background and a strong accounting skill, and that worked. I think then I realized, though, part of it was how do you communicate all that? And so, again, acknowledging I could have stayed, right, as an auditor and just kept that role. But, you know, I guess I learned I was interacting with customers and clients. And as I looked around, right, the world became about communication. And so getting some of that experience as to how you present, how you talk, not being, an accountant and numbers person to, you know, those people won't understand when you're talking accounting speak. And so how do you phrase, you know, that? And that was part of moving from the CFO to the CEO role, right, is that, again, I can't talk in numbers. I have to talk, right, in strategic discussion and kind of plain language that people understand what you're doing. And so I think it's, again, knowing what your strengths are, what your abilities, right, to grow are, and then searching those out. So I didn't wait for people to ask me to learn how to communicate, right? I went and took courses or, took opportunities as they got presented. And so I think that's, for me, it was about looking at what was around me and seeing that there were avenues that I could pursue. And it might not mean it resulted in a career, but it certainly added to my skill set.
Georgette, do you like to make any final comments for today?
No, just that, you know, I think, again, leaders, right, we have choices. And I think as we look at what's happening in the world today, we all have choices about either sitting back and letting it evolve, right, or helping to move it forward. And I think, you know, strong leaders, right, will step up and try to change and move things in a different direction.
Georgette, thank you very much for your time. I thoroughly enjoyed having you here today. You've been listening to No Limitations.